How's that? Can you guys hear me okay? Great. Welcome. I was just looking at a couple of things here. All right. Welcome to the session. It's right about time, so we'll get started. I always like that analogy from the airlines, you know, when you're traveling and they say, we know you have a choice of selecting different airlines, so thank you for flying with us today. Same thing with me. I know you have so many sessions to go to and you showed up here, so thank you for flying with me today. How many of you were in my session yesterday? All right, you get extra frequent flyer miles. And those who weren't, I have a next session right here. So if you stay, you get extra bonus miles too. Let me start with my introduction. I'm Bhargav Shukla. Those who don't know me, I'm an MVP, Active Action MVP, actually for the first time, because before this year in 2012, I was at Microsoft. You can't be MVP if you're Microsoft. I am Exchange and Link MCM. For those who know what MCM is, for those who don't, that doesn't exist anymore, so don't worry about it. I work at Camp Technologies now, working as a director for product research, look after the product roadmap, both short-term and long-term. However, don't let that fool you, because I worked with Exchange ever since I started my IT career. When I came out of college, I was a civil engineer. So again, don't let that fool you either. I started with IT, I started with Exchange. Microsoft Mail was something I worked on for a little bit, but Exchange 4 onwards, I worked quite a bit, and it was fun ever since. What we are going to talk today is integration with Link and SharePoint. So how Exchange integrates with Link and SharePoint, what value does it bring, what does it look like as an end user and as an IT administrator, right? As you guys manage that, what does it look like for you to configure that? And as an end user, what does it look like when they go in their Outlook or Link or OWA or SharePoint portal for that matter? So we are going to talk about architecture, what the background is, what components work together to bring all these products together and integrate them. We'll walk through the configuration steps, and demos are sprinkled throughout the session, so we'll do the demos as we go through. So the architecture looks something like this, the Christmas tree, right? You have lots of lights there. None of them flickering, sorry, I didn't do that, but you have all these different products and you have different features, how they integrate with each other. So the base of the integration is OAuth. It uses the server-to-server authentication, which makes it simpler for the servers to act on behalf of user, connect to the other server, and get the information it needs. So there is a trust between the servers, authentication, and then on behalf of user, servers are acting. And that's why all four across the Office web apps, Link Exchange, and SharePoint are lit up there. Site mailboxes are giving you a way to share your information. How many of you like public folders? Love public folders, rather. a few hands, right? One of the things which public folders is a lot of, and I used to do that, we just put the information there, all the attachments, instead of sending attachments, we just say, hey, I have put it in our team public folder, just go check out, right? It wasn't exactly what the site mailbox offers, but what site mailbox does is it makes it even better. When you have the integration and when you see the site mailbox in your Outlook, instead of sending the file as an attachment, you can just put it in SharePoint. So just click and drag from Outlook into the team mailbox, and it would show up in SharePoint. For the recipient, it looks like a link in your Outlook. And when they click that, it basically takes you to SharePoint, shows you the document. High resolution photos. So this is another feature that came along with 2013. Now user can upload their own photos either from Exchange, Link, SharePoint. You could take your high resolution photos up there and Exchange mailbox is where it is stored. It then manages how it showed, where it showed, whether it's low resolution or high resolution. Task synchronization. When you're using SharePoint, it's a portal. It also has tasks of its own. And then you have tasks in Exchange, right? How many of you use OneNote? And how many of you actually synchronize tasks from OneNote to Exchange, or to Outlook, rather, right? Yeah, same thing here, but now it's happening at the server level, right? You have the task, you create it in Exchange or you create it in SharePoint. When you as a user opt in, it starts synchronizing that periodically, and now your SharePoint tasks show up in Outlook, your Outlook tasks show up in SharePoint. Unified Context Store, Unified Context Store. In Link, when you add people to your list, you start your link for the first time, the contact list is empty. When you add user you frequently talk to over Link, over IM, it starts building that contact list and it's stored in Link. But with 2013, if you have integration between Link and SharePoint, Link and Exchange, rather, you have the context store, which is then migrated to Exchange. And we'll see that, how that works. But what it does is now your contacts live in Exchange, just like your regular Exchange contacts do, right? You have your address book, you have all the people, it syncs with your ActiveSync, you see all the people in one place. However, your Link contacts stayed in their own place in 2010. So with 2013, you have the integration. It allows you to store all those contacts in Exchange. So you would see a new contact list pop up in Outlook that says Link Contacts. And you will be able to manage it from there. You can do a few things, you cannot do certain things, and I'll show you what you can and cannot do. Presence. How many of you actively use Presence to find out if someone is busy or not before you ping them? And how many of that presence states are a lie? Well, this integration is not going to help you with that, unfortunately. But what it will help you is it doesn't matter where you are in Outlook, in Link, or in SharePoint. It will show you the state, the present state, and it's same across the board. So you don't have to go to Link for an example to see if the person's busy or not. Meeting recordings. Many times you wish you were in a meeting and you wanted to have a recording. Let's say you were training your staff and then you wanted to have it as a reference for future trainings. You could easily just record it, hit a record button in Link, and you can then just pull it back up whenever you need. It stores it as, I believe, the WMV file. You could easily share it over your internal or external channels depending on what the content is. How many of you have used the meeting recordings with Link? Pretty easy, isn't it? As long as it's allowed from the server perspective. Voicemail. Link enables voice. You can have Link as your phone. You can have your PBX integrated with Link. Your phone, somebody calls your landline, it rings in your Link, whether you have a physical Link phone on your desk or just a headset that's connecting to your machine and your Link client is working as your phone. When you don't pick up that phone, what happens? Link itself doesn't have voicemail capability. You have to integrate that with Exchange to get the voicemail, right? So that integration is important. Let's look at the foundation. So the foundation is OAuth. Oh, sorry. Using the wrong tool. So how many of you have worked with OAuth, either used it integrated in your Exchange or know what OAuth is in general? A few hands, good. OAuth is an open standard. This came along because of the need of all these different applications, you know, the web has been exploding for a while. Everything is with more and more push to the cloud, and I hate to say that, that's why I was smiling. Everything is cloud nowadays, right? You buy a hard drive, it's cloud. Your personal cloud. Anyhow, so the integration between all these different things, right? Whether it's something personal or your Office 365 and Salesforce and Azure Active Directory, they all can now work together. There was a need identified a while ago with the task force and all these different entities that work on the standards to figure out how we tackle the problem of all these applications having their own identity, right? Why can't I, as an organization, work with some other organization using the identities that I already have for my users and make it easy to integrate those two? You always had Active Directory and you could use ADFS and that works, but it wasn't that open standard, right? So OAuth came along. For those who can't fall asleep in the night or it's difficult for you guys, go read some of the RFCs, one of them being 6749. That explains how the OAuth framework works. But that defines different components of OAuth, how they work together, and so on. When it comes to Microsoft products, Microsoft adapted that OAuth 2.0 framework, but it's never as simple as taking it as is and making it work in your products, right? So the MXX OAuth, the one at the reference at the bottom, is basically Microsoft's implementation, which extends OAuth to work with its applications, along with JSON, the JavaScript object notations, the tokens that are used between the servers for authentication using JavaScript. So you have those extended as part of the Microsoft standard. And I have the link in the next slide if you fancy reading that as your bedtime reading. But that, again, shows how Microsoft does it, and it's also a good reference if you're a developer. For us, for today's session, what matters, again, a wrong one, this one here. What you have is you have these three entities we are going to talk about, Exchange Link, SharePoint. They all talk to each other. The way it works is the server authenticates to the other server using OAuth. You are going to set up that trust. And it's not something that you had in 2010, new feature in 2013. Allow a server to request resources on behalf of a user from other servers. So basically, in a very simple setup, what it should look like is that you have, every time you establish a trust, let's say you started with Exchange Server and you set up a partner application for Link, you're establishing that one-way trust, right? And then you have to do the same from the other side. So now that trusts you if you want to have some features from SharePoint able to access Exchange, and so on. Okay, so we talked about what OAuth provides, but in terms of Exchange and Link and SharePoint, what you're going to see is you have different ways. Again, if you go read that RFC, you would be intrigued how you could provide authentication. One of the ways of doing that is you have all these different applications that go to a particular authentication provider. In our case, between Exchange Link and SharePoint, the authentication is created by the self-issued tokens between the servers. So what's going to happen is when you go to Exchange, and I have one of the animations coming up that will clear it up a little bit, but when you go to an application, let's call eDiscovery, or let me hold that off for a second, actually. That's exactly what we have in next slide. But you will see how it's issued. User goes to the application. Application needs the resource from the other application, so it creates the token for authentication, passes it on to the next server. Next server says, okay, this token is correct based on the trust I already have with that application. Gives you the data, and once you got the data, it is passed back to the user. What I want to point out is there has to be something well known, right? When you're establishing that trust, how do you establish the trust? How does somebody stopping you, you know, a cop stopping you on the highway, what do they ask for first? A license and other things, right? License is that trust. They look at the license, make sure it's valid. And that's a trust because it's issued, it's well known that the license has this, and these attributes. It has to be issued by this authority. Same way, what you have here is you have these three applications. Each application has a well-known endpoint for the metadata, for authentication. When you configure the applications for OAuth, you will see you would be using these URLs to establish trust. So it's well known, it always goes to that. You cannot really change that URL. The only thing you definitely change is the server FQDN to the actual FQDN of the application. So if you look at the workflow, you have a user, you have SharePoint, you have Exchange. At this point, you already know, since we talked about it, the first thing that happens is user goes and requests something from SharePoint. In this case, we're doing an e-discovery, so user issues a query. It says, go find me this information from user, right? Whether it's within SharePoint or from Exchange. In this case, we also want to find something from Exchange. So the first thing happens on the SharePoint server is that STS token has to be issued, the authentication token, right? It's self-issued, so the application generates the token, and it says, here's the user, here's the access that it has, passes it on to Exchange. So now it's passed on to Exchange. Exchange goes ahead and validates that token, makes sure it's valid. If it's valid, then it just runs the query, returns the information back to SharePoint, and in turn, SharePoint then passes it back to the user. The advantage here is it's not just, you know, user could have gone straight to Exchange. The point here going through SharePoint is the user is not only asking for information from SharePoint and, from Exchange, it's also asking for information from SharePoint. So now you're issuing a single query. You're looking at all the information you have in SharePoint. You have documents in SharePoint. You have the tasks and other things. And then you have emails in Exchange. You want to have a query that finds the emails and the documents in SharePoint that matches your query and then returns you a unified set of results. All right, so what does the configuration look like? What I'm going to do is break it down, instead of by task, I'm going to break it down by servers. Link, Exchange, and SharePoint, what you have to do on each. For me, I guess, it makes it easier for me to do everything on one server first and then go on to the next one and so on. You could do it many different ways, but this is one of them. So what we're going to look... what we are going to look at on Exchange, first, the prerequisites. What you need to have in place before you can establish the connection, trust the application. On Exchange, you need to have your auto discover set up. So you're all Exchange guys, you're at Mac. What do you do to set up auto discover correctly on the inside? Let's not worry about outside right now. What's the step to configure auto discover? Do you have to configure anything specific after you install Exchange? Yes? Can you tell me what? Sorry? Right, so you're saying the DNS entry and then the record? Not necessarily. It really depends. And yes, that's the right way of doing it, but if you install Exchange and if you have a client that's connected to the domain, you don't need any records. It's going to find that from SCP. However, what you do need, how many of you actually set it up without load balancer in the mix? A couple hands. Almost everyone sets up high availability, you have multiple servers, a load balancer. The first thing you want to do is change that SCP so it goes through the load balancer, not pointing to the individual servers, right? The other problem with leaving it as is SCP is pointing to the server FQDN. Which certificate do you have for that? Self-signed. Is that trusted? Clients don't trust it, right? So the auto discover has to be set up correctly. Make sure it's the right certificate bound on the exchange. You have the DNS entry. If you're load balancing, make sure it's pointing to the load balancer, right? Update the SCP. That's the inside. On the outside, you could either use auto discover dot your domain name in the DNS, or you could create the SRV record. Whichever way you go, you have to make sure you have configured auto discover so everyone can use it. To create the applications in Exchange, you need to have proper permissions, right? So make sure you have proper RBAC roles. Again, I'm not gonna list all that here, it would be too much. But you need to make sure you have that permissions. For site mailboxes, you can access them only from Outlook 2013. So make sure you have Outlook 2013 as a client if you plan to use site mailboxes. Link 2013, you need OAuth certificate. Now this is something you need in everything, but in Exchange, when you install Exchange and go to server, look at the certificates, you will see three certificates. Self-signed, created when you install Exchange. One of them is OAuth certificate, automatically assigned for the OAuth functions. And that's why it's not listed as a prerequisite. You don't have to necessarily create another certificate for OAuth specifically in Exchange. However, if you want to, and if you want to use it, whether the internal CA issued certificate or another trusted certificate, if you want to use that, that's fine. Like I said, it's not necessary. If you're using self-signed certificate that comes with Exchange for OAuth, that's fine. What you have to remember, whether it's self-signed or not, is when it is expiring, so you change that in the OAuth. Whenever it's expiring, just change it, install the new certificate. In OAuth configuration, specify you're going to have that next certificate, effective date XYZ, and OAuth automatically rolls over to the new certificate when the time comes. No interruption to your application. Now, of course, except you forget to do that step. In Link 2013, the difference is OAuth certificate is not created by default, just like any other certs, right? In Link, how many of you have installed Link? Almost everyone, right? There are a few who haven't. And you know how that works. You go through the wizard when you're installing it, you go through the installation steps, and the third step is to do the certificates. It will walk you through the certificates. Based on your topology, it will know what the names are supposed to be. One of the options is, of course, there are two different certificates. One is for your OAuth. So you select that, create the cert. In case of Link, you have to take that somewhere. You have to get that certificate issued either by internal CA or external CA, so whichever one you choose. Remember, all this is going on internal, right? User is not accessing that directly, that URL. It's between the application, so it could easily be an internal CA. All right, and then SharePoint. One thing that you have to do is install Exchange Manager API on all the web front ends in SharePoint. That's how it communicates with Exchange. And then create the service applications. Again, it's the same concept. Each application is creating that trust with the other application in a different way. All right, so let's look at what the config actually looks like. For Exchange, you're going to create a trust for different applications. So for SharePoint, Exchange provides the scripts already. The script does everything for you. You just need to know the script syntax. So the script is located in Exchange Scripts folder. The easy way to do that, if you don't want to remember the path, is go to Exchange Management Shell and change to $xscripts. That's a variable that basically expands into that path, right? So $xscripts, go to that, and then run the Configure Enterprise application. What you would notice here is you're creating trust with SharePoint. So look at the metadata URL. We had that slide on three different unique URLs, right? That's the URL for SharePoint. So it's the same URL, just replace the SharePoint host name with the actual name, whether it's load balanced or going straight to the SharePoint server. Point to that name, leave the rest intact, and it will, the script will go ahead and create the partner application. Next step is, it's not necessarily in the exact order, so you could do one first and then the other. Trust link server, I'm gonna jump the other one for now. It, create the same, just like you did the SharePoint, create the link application, right? Run the same script, this time you're pointing to the link URL and creating the link application. You see the application type link and the link URL. Also add users to discovery management role group. Now in the exchange, you assign the permissions using RBAC, right? You attended my RBAC session yesterday, you know what that looks like. But if you didn't, it's really simple. The discovery management role group is already created. You can manage that either from AD or from Exchange Management Shell or even from EAC. Go there, add the users who are supposed to use eDiscovery from SharePoint and Exchange. Add them to that group, and then they will have necessary access to run the queries. So that sets those things up. The next one is if you want to have OWA show your link status and allow you to talk to someone when you're traveling and you don't have access to your machine that has link installed, you can go to OWA, and you see the present state in the corner. If you're Office 365 user, you already know what it looks like. And we have demos, so you will see what it looks like regardless. You could just drop down, change your present state. You can talk to someone who is in your list, or you can talk to someone who is not in your list, but you can look up. The steps to do that is, of course, first set the OWA virtual directory to allow instant messaging. And then you have to take the certificate thumbprint from your front end, whether it's front end or front end pool. Take the certificate thumbprint. Take the link FQDN, whether it's enterprise, it's a pool, or whether it's standard edition, the server's own name, FQDN. Put it in the web config for OWA. Now, this is ugly. You have to remember every time you apply CU or apply a service spec, that file gets overwritten. Right? So you have to go back and put this in every time you apply that updates. So just remember that one thing that you have to do. Many times in my lab, I find out, why is it not working? And then I remember, yes, I have to do this step. So now for production, you better have some kind of process that says how to apply the patches instead of relying on memory. On link side, you're integrating with Exchange. Link does, well, there is a step that allows Link to integrate with Exchange, but if you think about the process, mostly what happens is with your discovery, you want to discover emails, right? If you have a legal query, legal says, I need this data on this case that we have. They have certain criteria. We want to find something with XYZ contract with confidential and XYZ in the name or in the conversation. Well, the conversation could have happened in IM over link. What you can do is you can configure link to save all the conversations, whether it's IM or web conferencing, whether it's internal or along with partners, external communications. You could integrate that so that all that can be pushed into your mailbox, in user's mailbox. So now, as the conversations happen, they're also stored in your mailbox, which then is discoverable from SharePoint. So SharePoint, you run one query, it doesn't actually go to link, but because it's stored in Exchange, the query returns everything. So you have to configure a connection with Exchange. The first thing you have to do is auto-discover URL. Tell link where to look for Exchange information, auto discover. It's going to run the auto discover. It's going to know where to connect for each user and so on. And then create the partner application. Once that's done, your integration is complete. Now you want to enable archiving so you can start saving data in Exchange. So run a couple of commands right there. The first one is you're enabling the archiving at the org level. You're saying enable archive. You can configure it for IM only, or you can say IM and web conferencing. So if you have the meetings going on and you want to record all the conversation, not the audio, but the conversation. and enable archiving. At that point, it's enabled at the org level. You still have to apply the policy to the users, and that's the next step. So set the policy. Once you set the policy, now the users who fall under the scope of that policy, in our example, we're using global. So every user who doesn't use custom policy will have the global assigned out of the box, and it will apply to all those users. And this does not take into account the hybrid. So all we are talking about is on-prem. Hybrid OAuth is possible. Again, I'm not covering that in this slide deck, but that's something that's, I believe, is being documented as we speak. It was enabled with Service Pack 1. You're able to do integration between on-prem and Office 365. Again, that's not the scope, so I'm sorry, I'm not covering that here. It's possible. It's not very intuitive, though, just yet. And then trust the SharePoint server. So as you see, it's that same pattern repeating itself, right? Trust from Link, trust SharePoint from Exchange, trust SharePoint from SharePoint, trust Exchange and Link, and so on. Except the metadata is different, the actual commandlet itself is different. In Link, the next one is configure voicemail. If you have voice enabled in Link, you want to have the voicemail, of course. You don't want the phones to ring and ring and ring and then go nowhere if somebody cannot pick it up. So configure the voicemail integration. It's relatively simple in 2013 when you compare it to 2010. However, it's not the steps I would list in one slide, so I just left it in the Link. But it's relatively simple setup. Configure OWA integration. So here you're just telling Link where to connect. You're pointing it to the Exchange FQDN, which usually, if you have high availability, you're pointing it to the load balanced URL. Who the registrar is, which is your Link server. And once you register that, now your OWA integration is complete. If you remember, we had two steps. One was on the Exchange side, right? You configured it in the OWA virtual directory. And the other side of that is here on the Link side. So once you do that, don't forget to enable the CS topology. That's one step some people forget, including myself. I have done that before. When you forget to publish the topology, it's enabled, but it's not published. All the servers don't get it from CMS, and they don't know it's enabled. So, all right, and configure SharePoint. Last piece, we talked about Exchange, we talked about Link. Now, SharePoint, simple steps. Configure trust Exchange server, trust Link server. There are a couple of commandlets. That's easy enough. The third one is a little bit tricky after you configure the permissions. The last one that you see right there, configure site mailbox permissions. There is a script that you need to run. However, unlike Exchange, the script isn't built into the product. So you go there to that URL, which has the whole script as a body in that article. Copy that, save it as whatever you want to name it, run that script. You will have to customize a couple parameters that points to your URLs. And once you do that, that script will configure the permissions and enable the integration with Exchange. Just a little bit of, you know, out of the way step, unlike all the others we saw before. So now the fun part. This is where we will sprinkle all the demos, right? Let's look at what it actually looks like. And I got to bore you with some details before we do that. So site mailboxes. How many of you have actually used site mailboxes? A couple. If you're Office 365, most of that is already done. So you just have to use those features. And I'll show you how simple it is. What does it actually, you know what, hang on. One thing, I didn't have a slide for demo of the integration steps we talked about. You know how what the commandlets are and such from the slide, but I do have it ready here. So let me show you that first, and then we'll come back to these integrations. So here's my Exchange server, and all those steps that I talked about, they're already in the script. It's literally just those commandlets, but I have the custom URLs and all that, so I don't have to actually type it here. But what I'm going to do is when I run that, you will see each of those commandlets going through, right? So from Exchange, just run, like I said, you run the scripts. I'm already in that script folder, or I'm pointing to that script folder. Run the Enterprise Partner application. The first one we are doing is SharePoint. So what you will see is Exchange goes and creates the application trust. It assigns the necessary permissions. It also creates a user object, which is mail enabled for the application to communicate with. And the configuration succeeds. Now, this would have failed if the URL was not correct. Right, so you have to make sure the prerequisites are met. Once that's done, the other one is link application. So you're pointing to the link URL. It goes through the same steps. If the URL is configured correctly, it works. If it's not configured correctly, this is what you get. So you get best of both worlds in the demo, right? And yeah, I haven't configured that. That's why you're getting that. So that's the Exchange side. And let's go over to the link side. So here's my link front end. Again, save time, so I already have that script. Is font readable? Are you able to at least see what's going on there? Okay, so the first one I ran was pointed to the AutoDiscover URL. One thing you have to remember here, I should have mentioned that in the slide, but just remember that AutoDiscover URL, when you look at the virtual directory, you would see /autodiscover/autodiscover.xml. Right? Look what it says here. It doesn't say XML. Make sure you're not saying XML here. It has to be SVC. That's the endpoint that metadata URL is expecting, not XML. XML is used by Outlook. XML is used by anything else that's using AutoDiscover from Exchange perspective. For OAuth, it's expecting the AutoDiscover SVC. All right, so just make sure that that is correct. And the next one, you create the partner application from the link going to Exchange. So you point it to the AutoDiscover or the URL of the client access. I think it's running, but it might be stuck on the URL. There you go. And that's because I don't have that URL configured on the load balancer itself. And that's because I have load balancing next. So I couldn't have a configured load balancer first. I could have, but I didn't. And the last one, you're enabling the archiving configuration, right? Enable the archive configuration at the org level. You're saying allow the archiving. You're not applying it to the users just yet. You're just enabling that. You enable that. And then the next one is setting the policy so it applies to the users. And that would be it. That's done. Now, I'm not going to show you the SharePoint one. Like I said, you have to go and copy it from the article, put it in the script, and do other stuff. So, but you get the idea. It's the similar steps for SharePoint, just different commandlets. So let's go back to this one now. And look at site mailboxes. The site mailboxes, what it does is you go as a user to your SharePoint site. You have ability to create your own different sites. So let's say you're working on a project and you have a team that you're working with. You create a project website in SharePoint. Then you use the app. So you have an app to enable the site mailbox integration. You enable that app in your SharePoint for that particular project. Once you do, it will go and create the mailbox for the site mailbox in Exchange. And in Exchange, if you know, there are different types of mailboxes, user mailbox, team mailbox. What it does is creates the site mailbox, which is essentially a team mailbox. Allows you to share different things with the teams. And that's the integration point between SharePoint and your project. Now, what happens is, as a user, you just enable that when you go to your Outlook, it will show up as another mailbox in your Outlook pane. 2013 is required. It does not work with OWA either, so you can't log on to OWA and expect site mailbox to show up. Once it does, now you can drag and drop documents there. So let's say you received a document from vendor related to the project. Here's the quote. All right, drag it, drop it into the team mailbox right from Outlook. And what it's going to do is take that document and put it in SharePoint. What it will also do is, because you're dragging it into the site mailbox that lives in Exchange, it's going to remove that after the document is uploaded into SharePoint. Document is going to live in SharePoint. Metadata of that document, name of the document, and other properties are going to live in the mailbox. So as a user, when you go in Outlook and you look at the documents folder, you will see all the documents. But when you click that, it would actually take you to SharePoint. So you're reducing the storage. You don't have to duplicate that in SharePoint and Outlook, right? So let's see. Just want to make sure I didn't miss anything. And what it looks like is that your content is where it belongs. How many of you actually use Project Server? A couple. Good. It's not something that a lot of people use. But if you're using that, you have the tasks from Project Server. You can also synchronize that in SharePoint. Right? So we haven't talked about that specifically out of scope for what I wanted to present today, but it is also possible. The other thing is lifecycle. Lifecycle is very helpful because when you have a SharePoint site, you can configure the lifecycle of that project. You can say this project is going to run for 6 months. It has an end date. When the end date approaches, the administrator of that site is reminded, hey, you have to either just let it expire or extend if the project is still going to run beyond the end date. And as an administrator, you can say, nah, extend it another 6 months or let it die. When the project is over, when that site goes into deletion, now the content stops showing up from Outlook. Your content goes in deletion mode. It stays there in SharePoint for some time, keeps reminding you as an administrator, hey, it's now deleted, but you can still enable it and stop the content deletion. So that's, think of that as your deleted items. And that at the end, as an administrator, if you really don't need it anymore and just keep ignoring it, at some point it will just go away, right? Again, very helpful in managing your life cycle of documents, of storage, instead of just like your public folders where there was no life cycle management. Things lived on forever, right? You go from version to version and you bring your items from one public folder in the same public folder over to the new version, and it has never been accessed forever. You have no idea whether it was accessed or not, when it was accessed, unless you run the tools and figure it out. Right? So anyway, let's go to a demo. What we're going to do is we're going to look at the site mailbox. So the first things first, I'm going to log on as, and what I'm using in for the demos is Office 365. Makes it easier for me to demo things. I'm logged on as a user. You see up here, Sarah Davis. Because we want to do the site mailboxes, and I also have, so let me bring the Outlook over. What you're going to see is you have Outlook, you have your mailbox here, and you have a couple other mailboxes, your archive mailbox. I already have one other site created before. You see the testing demo at the bottom. We will go and create a site first, so we'll just not worry about Outlook right now. And we go to Sites. It'll take us to SharePoint. As long as it actually... And there, yeah, it's spinning. Just making sure. So now you're in SharePoint. What you're going to do is create a new site. Sorry, I can barely see. Let me just move over a little bit. So these are different sites I already have. And New site, sorry, yeah. So this one, let's give it a name, Mac Demo. And it wouldn't take too long, it would just quickly create a site. There we go. And we have our site. You see the far right, keep email in context, right? That's the app. So the first thing we need to do is add that to our site that we just created. Add that so we can use it. It's a little bit counterintuitive if you haven't used it, because it's not already there and enabled for you. It's an app, additional module that you have to add to your site. And once you do, you will see it show up here, new, right? So click on that. And like it says, it's actually making call to exchange. The integration has to be done for this to work. It's making a call to exchange. It's creating that site mailbox in exchange, doing the rest of the setup on SharePoint side. And you see the site mailbox has been created. Now you can go back to your SharePoint site. You would see the email. Well, actually, I could just go back to the app, mailbox. And when you click mailbox, you would notice it actually takes you to the mailbox that it just created. And just like OWA, the first time setup, it asks you for your language, your time zone. You just select whichever time zone, and I can barely see, so I'll just pick one. It's not going to matter which time zone that site mailbox lives in. And there it is. Now you have the site mailbox. It also tells you what email address you have that you can send emails to if you need to. You don't always have to, and there is a better way, which I will show you from the Outlook side. So now it's created. Let's go to Outlook. You still don't see that other one just yet. What happens is you have to wait for the AutoDiscover to take its time. Or you can just force the AutoDiscover to happen. So let's do that. Okay. And bear with me, I'm just typing the username and password, and then I'll just bring it over so you can see. Okay. So chances are you're all familiar with this dialog box, right? You go to Outlook in the taskbar, right-click with the control, brings up the test email auto configuration. And we test that. What you're going to get back is your AutoDiscover configuration. What we want to see is what shows up in XML. So when you go to XML and go all the way to the bottom, you would notice you have the SharePoint mailbox show up here as a site mailbox at the bottom, right? You see the SRD, you have the Mac demo, the SMO-Mac demo. You also see the type team mailbox right where my cursor is. That's your team mailbox. So the AutoDiscover already sees that new team mailbox that we just created, which means if you restart Outlook, it would just show up in there. You don't even have to restart Outlook, but we have to force it since it hasn't showed up yet. Okay, so okay, and this is where it should show up. It hasn't just yet. I'm sorry? Yes, and that's not very helpful. How many of you know this bug? No, it's a bug. And what happens is if you do this, if you go to account settings, And when it shows up, whenever it shows up, if you do a repair profile, this is the bug in SP1 I have found out. If you do the repair, after that, when you restart the Outlook, it just goes in the offline. And it stays in offline every time you start the Outlook. So you have to force it to go online. So unfortunately, I happened to repair the profile. I was impatient before the demo. And now I'm stuck with that. Anyhow, so now we say that Mac demo right there. So that's great. That's what we wanted. That's the new one that we just created. You also see the testing demo is gone because I had deleted that site before the demo. So that's gone. Now you see the new Mac demo. When you expand that, you're going to see something similar to your mailbox. You would see the inbox and documents. So when you look at the inbox, you see that same welcome mail that you saw in SharePoint, right? Exactly same thing. Lives in SharePoint. You see it in Outlook. Let's drop a document in there. So if we go to Sarah's inbox, and there has to be something with attachment, not this one, that's not the best candidate. If we take, that might work, or, okay, so Tailspin's fine. And drag that, put it in the documents. All right, and it's working right now on putting the document in SharePoint. You see that in italics, just like in your sent items. If you're impatient and you go in your outbox after hitting send, you see that email still just going, right? That's what it's doing. It's taking the document from the site mailbox, uploading it to the SharePoint, and it would take just a little bit. Well, it's done. When you see it as that, it's bold. It shows in document you have one new document, and if you have your site members, right now we just created the site. We haven't given anyone access to it, right? But if you gave access to somebody, then they will be able to access the document. Let's go ahead and send it to somebody. So forward. And what you're going to see is that. A new email. The document is not attached. Notice it automatically converted that to the link for SharePoint, right? It just says open document. Let's send it to Alex. Go ahead and send that. And we have Alex somewhere here, so there's our buddy Alex. Just got a new mail from Sarah, so that's not it. That's your new notification. Oh, that's not it. Okay, let's give it a moment when it shows up. But what you will see is you will see that link. Now, don't forget, we haven't given this guy permission to that document or to that site yet, right? So while we're waiting for that email, we can go here, and then we go back to the site. Go to permissions. No, I don't mean to drag it. Site settings. And you go to site permissions. Members. Add someone. And we add Alex in here. So now Alex has permission to that site. While we're waiting for the email, so let's go back to this guy and see if he got the email yet. Yep, so you get the invite for the site. I have no idea why that email hasn't showed up yet. Oh, right here, sorry. We were staring at it. Anyway, open document, it will take you to SharePoint. If integration with Office Web App is enabled, it would render the document right in the frame. You don't even have to download it. Since that's not enabled, it's asking you to download the file and open it in Word, or if this was Internet Explorer, and since I can't share the same session, I'm just using different browsers, but you just download the document, document is going to come down, and you will be able to open it in your Word, Excel, whatever the document attachment was. Well, don't forget the document lives in SharePoint. So the same experience as your SharePoint document with the new versions. You can have multiple people opening the same document, and it would handle it the same way it does with regular Office. So you will be able to edit them simultaneously if you opened it that way. If you're doing the versioning, and if you enable versioning, it requires the checkout. Only the person who has checked it out will be able to edit it, and others will see it as a read-only. So if versioning is not enabled, same experience, multiple people editing the same spreadsheet at the same time, and you will see who's editing what. If it's Words, similar experience. Let me just make sure I'm not forgetting anything. So, any questions here? You like that experience of how it shows up, how easy it is, how it's shared? Yeah? Okay, I didn't hear it. Not for me, for the guys who did the work, but yes, it's a good experience for the users. All right, let me go back to our slides then. That one's done. We go to the e-discovery next. How many of you have dealt with lawyers or someone coming from legal saying, I need this information? How many times you went to different places to gather that information, went to SharePoint or went to Exchange or went to? With this integration, I'm going to show you what it looks like. The biggest thing is you don't even have to do the work. Enable integration, give permission to those lawyers or their liaisons, the people who are asking you that question. Chances are, because they're lawyers and they deal with this all the time, they know the KQL, the query language, how to query for this information, because their tools use the same KQL language, right? Give them the permission to SharePoint, enable the integration, make sure your policies are retaining that information in Exchange and so on. And then what they're going to see is something like that, where they can create the cases, they can create the queries, and once they find the information they were looking for, they can even export it. Just take it home, pass it on. So this is relatively simple, but we'll just see in the demo what it looks like. You can export the content in different ways. If it is mail-related content, then you can also export it as a PST. The experience is when you go in browser, you will run the search, and I'll show you what it looks like. But when you run the search and export, you will run the search, save the results, and it will pop up with an application, a web application. It's a download manager. It's just then going to allow you to download the actual content that's exported. So let's jump right in. Going back to Sarah Davis. Is this the right one? Yes, Sarah Davis. So go back to sites again. Actually, even better. I can just go to site settings. Do I not have a URL? Give me just 1 second. Those URLs always deceive me. Sorry, I'm just waiting for it to load. It takes just a little bit to show up. Okay, there we go. Sorry. So here's your Discovery Center. And you see a bunch of cases already created. You can either create a new case or work with the existing cases. So let's go ahead and create a new case. So right here, you just create a new case. We'll just call it the Mac demo case. You create the case, you give it the URL that you're going to access that case from. You can always come to the eDiscovery Center and pick the case as well, or go to the URL directly. Once you create the case, you're going to see the experience that I showed you in the slide earlier, right? Start with the discovery set. The discovery set is going to allow you to define the query of what you're looking for. So let's start with the filter. We are looking for something that has Contoso in it. Did I write it? Or confidential, right? Just something that simple. You can define that and save. The other thing that you can do here is get stats. Now, this is a quick way of looking at if you're getting the hits, if you're defining your query right. Right, so when you do the stats, what you're going to see is up above where it says items and size, it's going to populate that to show you quick results. And it might take a little bit sometimes, but the idea is that's where you will see the quick hits, even before you run the full search and get the results out of it. I'm forgetting one thing. I have to add the sources. It can't search anything. It doesn't know where to search, right? So you have to add who your scope is. So when you have a case, you usually know who your people are that you are working with. CEO sent something to someone else. You know those people. Just add them. So here our usual suspects are Sarah and Alex. So we'll just add those two in here. Now, since we are not only working with mailboxes and we are working with SharePoint, you could also specify the sites here if you know the locations, right? So in here, we created that Mac demo site. So let's go ahead and add that as well. If anybody... Okay. Since it's looking for URL, I'm going to skip that, but I showed you the URL when we created the case. You have the URL for Mac demo site as well. You just copy and paste, not the URL of the case, but the URL of the Mac demo folder we created, and put that in here, and you will be able to search content within that SharePoint site. So let's hit OK for now. And now you have the scope, and you would see the get stats. This got populated automatically. It's doing the search. Takes a little bit and shows you how many items it found, what's the size of the information that it found, so you get a quick glance of how big an export you're going to have. Go ahead and let's save that. Now here you have an option of disable and enable in-place hold. You're familiar as an exchange guy, you are able to place hold on the mailboxes, right? So once you have the query, if you want to, from that point on, place and hold on that information, you can just enable it right from here. And once you do that, think of that as an admin, how much less work you have to do when lawyer can do that themselves, lawyer or whoever's working with the legal team can do that on their own, right? They can just come in here, put the legal hold. They don't have to rely on you. Yes, go ahead. It puts the content on hold, not the entire mailbox.
So if it's a better period of time, now they want to go back and put something else on hold, they would have lost the ability for some of that timed out or expired content.
That's right. That's right. It's the in time. Now, you can, of course, put the entire mailbox on hold if that's the need. They will have to let you know or increase their scope to cover a lot more things based on query, based on dates, different criteria. So eDiscovery set name, you give it a name for the set that you just created, save that. Shows up, now you have the set. The next step is search and export. So let me show you that one real quick. We're good on time, so. All right, so here you have the query, the name. We don't need to do the query because we have already defined that, right? So let's give it a name. I can see that you already have these guys. It shows you the items. Same thing that we did before. If you had the SharePoint site included in the scope, you would also see the documents that would show up in here. So the Word documents or PowerPoint, whatever matches that query and scope would show up in here. And then you can save or export. So if you click export, it would show you the estimated total just like it was showing you in the statistics, the item size. And then you click OK. You also have ability to remove duplicates and other things. You download result or download report. Report only is telling you how many items it found, same thing as the statistics. Results are actually downloading the items, right? And what you briefly saw at the bottom and then it went away is my browser settings are stopping stuff from being downloaded if it's not trusted. But otherwise, it would have popped up that application. No, actually, that's not true. It's the second screen deceiving me. That's what you expect. You expect the application, and when you hit run, it would start that download manager. And when it does, there you go. So here's your download manager. It's asking you to define the location locally to your machine where you want to save this export. And then once you define that, it will ask you to log on to the portal with your username and password again. And once you do that, it will download that content. So we can skip that part for now. But you get the idea. So that is how you do the eDiscovery. I will take the questions, of course, afterwards as well. So let me go through a couple things real quick. High-resolution photos, how many of you have actually used that? 2013 enabled that. How it works is the photos that you upload as either as an administrator or as a user using OWA, Link, or SharePoint, when you upload those photos, it's stored in Exchange for high resolution. Exchange resizes it in three different sizes I mentioned here, 48 by 48. 48 by 48 goes in Active Directory as that AD thumbnail photo. As an attribute, it's stored in Active Directory. 96 by 96 is used by OWA, Outlook 2013, Link 2013. Again, the three versions stored in Mailbox, but served to different needs. And then you have the high-res photo, the 648 by 648, used by Link 2013 and Link Web App. It's not used by Exchange. Because in meetings, when you blow up that meeting, when you're only having an audio conversation, you see that square with the people, either photo or just a gray default man figure or ladies figure. So instead, now you upload your own photo and you see the actual photos. How it works in the background is you go ahead and you upload your photo that goes through your Outlook into Exchange stored in there. When you're looking for the photo, however, depending on which application is looking for the photo, let's say SharePoint up top is looking for the photo, it would make a query. It would get a result from Exchange. It would get the photo and cache it. Right? Remember, this is important. It's caching it. So when you update the photo, when user updates the photo or admin updates the photo of that user in Exchange, it's updated. SharePoint would still show you the old photo. It's cached. I believe there is a timeout, so when it will try again and then cache again. But for demo, I'll show you how you can just update your own photo and then it would update the cache. For Link, depending on the version you're using, the workflow is a little bit different. If it's Link 2013, it actually just uses EWS, goes to Exchange, and fetches the photo, so it's live. User updates the photo, it's immediately updated on your side. If it's Link 2010, legacy client back there, it uses ABS, which is on your Link server, address book service, and address book service fetches the photo from Exchange. Right, so that's where you see that coming up and going to Exchange. Well, actually, sorry, address book, so it fetches it from AD, right? The photo comes from AD, and then it's showed to your legacy client. So there is a delay when the photo is updated, populated in AD, and then ABS fetches it. There is some delay there. And our favorite demo. So we go over to, closed. Yeah, so here's our favorite Sarah. Go to Outlook. And here's Sarah Davis. What you're going to do is change your photo. Right? Just click that. If you're in Outlook, you can do that from there. If you're in Link, you can do it from Link Options. And I'm going to make Sarah look something like this now. Once it comes up, there you go. Save. And she looks different now, right? If we go Alex, you see how Sarah still looks old Sarah? Because it's coming from cache, it hasn't updated yet. Once the cache is updated, you can see the new photo that Sarah just uploaded. If it was Link, however, if Alex was using Link, he would immediately see Sarah's photo. That is the new one that was just updated. All right. Task synchronization, so let me show you what that looks like. There isn't much on slide, so if you have any questions, stop me, but otherwise I'm in interest of time, I'm just moving forward. The slide basically just tells you that you have to opt in as a user. Before you opt in, the tasks won't automatically synchronize. There is a synchronization delay because it's a task that runs in the background on SharePoint to go and fetch the tasks from Exchange and from from Project if you have enabled that integration. So when I go to SharePoint site again, what you will see is there is a tasks section. All right, so here we go. You have the news feed. And you have the tasks right here. What you see here are the tasks that you have created in SharePoint, right? You can then, you can see active tasks and completed tasks and so on. So here you see the tasks either from SharePoint. Now what you see here, Northwind Trader tasks, as I told you, you can have multiple sites. This one is for the project related to Northwind Traders, right? So you have that. You have your personal tasks, which you don't have any right now. Let's go ahead and create one first in SharePoint itself. So we're going to create a new task. There we go. And now you have a personal task. Now you have a task coming from that Northwind Trader site. And let's look at the integration with Exchange, right? Sync to Outlook. This is that opt-in portion. You haven't opted in, so go ahead and click Sync Tasks, and now you have opted in. Now it will say Sync is enabled. And once that happens, it will not automatically update. It will take a while. It will take a little bit. You would notice when it was last updated right here at the bottom. So you can force it to update. It won't necessarily connect to Outlook right away. But what you would expect, so if you go to, if you go here and we go to tasks, you see the tasks there, right? These are your Exchange tasks, the tasks you have in your Exchange. You're not seeing other tasks just yet. Once the synchronization task catches up, you would start seeing the tasks coming from SharePoint in here under a different category. You would see the Northwind Traders task there. You would see your personal task coming from SharePoint in here. And these tasks will start showing up in your SharePoint. Right. The key is user must opt in. It's not automatic. Okay, Unified Context Store. I explained what it is. You have your Exchange link. In the link interface, you're adding users. And as you add users in your contact list, it will start synchronizing to Exchange. It's enabled by default on link side, but it still won't work if you haven't done the integration task that we went through earlier, right? So once you have that OAuth configured, integrations enabled, your contacts will be migrated to Exchange. It won't be going to the link server anymore. So as you add more contacts in your link list, it would start showing up in Exchange. What happens in your mailbox is a new folder is created. You would see the link contacts. That's where it will start showing up. The folder itself is read-only, which means you cannot add contacts from Outlook into link contacts. You cannot delete existing contacts from the link contacts folder from Outlook. However, you can edit the properties of those contacts. And when you edit the property of that context, I'll show you what it looks like. But if you wanted to add a birthday, or if you wanted to edit what you can as a display name or something like that, you can do that. And when you do that, it will start showing up in your link, right? So it allows you to do that. It's not stored in that folder because that folder is read-only, but it's stored in your mailbox as a metadata. So as the workflow, your link client makes the call to link server when you're adding a contact. I'm actually on red, so I gotta wrap up quickly, I guess. It stores the contact in Exchange. When you're looking for the information, once you already have a contact, it will just make a query to Exchange and show you the results. So let me show you what that looks like. So I'm actually going to go to Outlook. When we go to people, you would notice you have the link contacts here. These are the people I have in my link client. So if I go to link client, here's my contact list. Here are those guys, right? Let's do one thing here. I am going to add an external user to my contact list. Go ahead and add. So it shows up here. In a few minutes, it will show up there. While it does, well, there you go. Pretty quick, right? What we are going to do is edit this user in Outlook and change the name, right? Save it. If it's ambiguous, you're familiar with that. And save. The information is saved. You would see the update go there. And when it does, if you go to link, you see that's already updated. Right? Pretty simple. Not too much to it. Questions? All right. And presence, Again, that one is pretty simple. So what you would see is, you see people here, you see that little bar that shows you whether they're online or not. Alex is right now away. Alex is logged in right here. So let's go ahead and change Alex to busy. And you go to your link client. You would see Alex is busy. If you go to your contacts in Outlook, you would also see Alex is busy. So different places. If you were in SharePoint, you would also see Alex is busy. So if you're in SharePoint and you're looking at something that Alex posted, and next to it, it would be Alex's name. It would have that presence bar. You would see he's busy. Pretty simple stuff. What it does actually in the backend, however, is authority is link. Link is the one that says what the person's present state is, whether it's busy or not. So the reliance is on your link client. On your machine, when you're in Outlook and when you look at link, from Outlook, Outlook makes a call to link client. So let me log off of link client. And what you're going to see is, when I log off of link client, in my Outlook, this bar went away. I can't see the presence anymore. You have that reliance, right? It uses your local client. Anyhow, I know we have run over the time a little bit, so we are pretty much done with what I wanted to show you. I just want to jump to one thing real quick here, and voicemail, sorry. One last thing, I'm sorry. I know you guys want to run out. Let me just show you this real quick. What happens with voicemail is it shows up something like this. You see voicemail right here. User calls, link picks up the call, rings the user endpoints. User doesn't pick up the call because they're busy, away, whatever. Link then makes a call to Exchange. Integration's already done. It makes a call to Exchange. Exchange auto attendant picks up the call and sends it to the user's voicemail. Exchange gets the call, transcribes the message that user leaves. Message is then stored in the user's mailbox, both as an attachment that you see up there and the transcribed text. So even without opening the attachment, you can just see what the person said. Depending on the language, it would translate properly or not. But if it can translate properly, you would be able to just see the message and say it's important, not important, delete. If you have the link voice enabled and you're looking from the machine that has link, you can just click on the phone and call back if you want to do that. And that is it. That's the last one I had. So I know I kept you around. The last thing I want to do is remind you to do the evaluations. It's important for me. It's important for all of us. So it's important for all of us because once you do that, you can win these things. Important for me to understand how I did and how to do it better in the future if I didn't do something right. Just let me know how I did. And if you're sticking around, I think we have a session next coming up very soon. Thank you.